Well, 5 days down and 40 to go for this year's state legislative session. On the phone to highlight news from the legislature's first week, I have KBCW reporter Emily Means. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So, of course, what we heard last week, Medicaid, Republicans in the Senate expressing concern over the financial soundness of full Medicaid expansion that was approved by voters under Prop 3. So let's talk a little bit about what happened there about that last week.
Sure. So we mentioned last week that there were two Medicaid bills, Senator Christensen's SB 96, which made some adjustments to Prop 3, and then Senator Anderegg's SB 97, which completely repealed it. And SB 97 wasn't heard in the committee it was scheduled for on Tuesday, but in that same committee hearing, SB 96 did pass. It passed on a 6-2 vote with Democrats voting against. And then it was debated by the full Senate on Wednesday, and it hadn't yet had a fiscal note attached to it, so we didn't know how much that bill would cost. And because of that, they voted to do a third reading for SB 96, kind of hoping that that vote would happen by the end of last week. Well, the fiscal note came out late. I think it was like Friday afternoon or something. And it surprised a lot of lawmakers, a lot of Republican lawmakers who support SB 96. And, you know, one of the biggest grievances of Prop 3 by those legislators is that it's not within the budget, right? It's not financially sustainable, and in 4 or 5 years, it'll cost the state way more money, like $65 million, that's not covered by the sales tax in the ballot initiative. Well, for SB 96, the fiscal note points to $32.1 million needed from the general fund in fiscal year 19 and $39.8 million in fiscal year 20. So it would cost a lot more upfront than Prop 3 would. But budget analysts say that in the long run, it'll save the state hundreds of millions of dollars. And I'm still trying to figure out how. I'm not an economist, so I'm sorting out the numbers still. But Leslie, it's important to know that this all hinges on whether or not the federal government approves the state's request for these Medicaid waivers. So because SB 96 would expand Medicaid, you know, in a limited way, not as it is under the Affordable Care Act, the state requires permission from the government to go outside of this law. So they need two waivers for this. The first would be to approve federal government paying 70% of the cost, with Utah picking up 30% of the bill. But it only extends to 100% of the poverty level. So that's Utahns making $12,000 a year. So that's how it's different from Prop 3. And then they would need to apply for another waiver to get the 90-10 split where the government pays 90% of the cost. So it's really tricky. Healthcare policy is tricky, but this bill is moving really quickly through the legislature. And lawmakers say it's because they need to get those waivers into the government so that they can start the program by April 1st, which is what's outlined in Prop 3. And, yeah, today they're scheduled to hear SB 96 at the full Senate at 11 a.m. So I guess we'll see how everyone votes then.
Yeah, and this is so tricky because, I mean, we've heard for years about the repeal and replacement of, you know, Obamacare. So, I mean, while we may be losing money in these early days, the state legislature looking years out of a program that may not even exist.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the, I mean, it's similar to one of the complaints that advocates have, and you know, they're really, they think that they've crafted this bill, Prop 3 supporters. They've crafted this bill that's pretty solid, but if there do need to be some tweaks made to support it, in the next few years, they're totally open to doing that. It's just that, you know, they want the 138% of people covered. And, you know, in the long run, if they need to make some tweaks, then they want to be part of that conversation. But, you know, state lawmakers, particularly Republican state lawmakers, are, I don't know, I think they're a little hesitant to go ahead with Prop 3 because of the cost.
Okay. Last week, we talked a little bit about the impact that ballot initiatives may have on this session and, you know, questions about how do voters have a say in issues that lawmakers don't act on? I mean, we saw, of course, with last year's election, medical cannabis, Medicaid expansion. Again, they voters just saying that the legislature's not doing anything about it. They go to all the work to get the initiative on the ballot. It gets approved by voters and then lawmakers basically saying, well, we can repeal it.
Yeah, and I think that's frustrating to some voters because, yeah, exactly like you said, there's a big campaign involved. There's a lot of money involved to get these initiatives on the ballot. And, you know, it's even harder to get people out to the polls and actually vote for them. And voters did that in November. But I think it's also important to know that once an initiative is approved by voters, it's a law, and the legislature can amend a law in any way that they want, just like any other law. So I actually talked with University of Utah political scientist Matthew Burbank last week, and we had chatted before the November election, and he was saying that, you know, if legislators were to change Prop 2 or Prop 3 or Prop 4 or whatever, should they pass, he would be surprised by that because they tend to be a little bit careful with these citizen initiatives. You know, they show the will of the people, so to speak, and so legislators kind of back away from that. But Matt Burbank was surprised at the way the legislature has, you know, flexed their muscle on medical cannabis and Medicaid with Prop 2 and Prop 3. And, you know, usually they'll make some minor tweaks, you know, like some technical issues that they can fix in the legislative session or whatever. But he says that, you know, when they completely repeal a law or replace a law, it really sends a message to voters. And Matt said that, you know, depending on what happens with Medicaid this session, voters might remember that when we go into the 2020 election. So, you know, sometimes there are some consequences of tweaking these initiatives, but I guess we'll see what happens. Also, Leslie, there are 4 pieces of legislation that have been introduced this session to change the initiative process. So, you know, legislators kind of view their role, and rightly so, as making laws. And so that's why they're kind of at odds with the initiative process often. There are these 4 pieces of legislation, and they change the initiative process in different ways, such as delaying the effective date of initiatives so that they can kind of tweak them once they pass and before they take effect, and then also submitting the signed petitions to county clerks as these petition gatherers collect them so the county can post the signers' names to the website. So It's interesting, this conversation, and I think it will continue throughout the session.
Yeah, now a piece of legislation that we saw last year would have changed the process. That would have required signature gatherers to collect more signatures in less time. Have we seen anything like that?
No, I was looking at a summary of these 4 different bills, and it's nothing quite so obvious, I guess you could say. It's more like, you know, There's a bill that kind of focuses on the signature gathering process and also the signature removal process. So that was one of the tricky things we saw with last election, because if you remember, there was the Count My Vote ballot initiative. They had successfully gathered all the signatures, and then in like the next 2 weeks or whatever, it was people had removed the signatures, and so Count My Vote didn't make it to the ballot. So Things like that that are, I guess, more subtle than raising the bar to get your initiative on the ballot.
Okay. Last week, you caught up with Park City Assistant City Manager Matt Dias while he was down there at the Capitol. Talk to us about what he sees as the city's main priorities for the session.
Sure. Matt was there with the Park City Leadership Class, I think it's called. I think you're talking to Miles about that today, too. He said that he and Mayor Andy Bierman had caught up with Representative Tim Quinn and Senator Ron Winterton before the session started, and, you know, they had a few different concerns. One was that tax reform that we keep talking about, and that's Tim Quinn's bill. It's, you know, it hasn't been drafted or numbered yet. I guess those sorts of things take time. It'll be a pretty big piece of legislation. But, you know, basically it would lower sales tax on items, place tax on services, and, you know, that could potentially affect Park City, which brings in a lot of revenue from visitors who buy things.
Okay.
So then on the environmental front, Matt said he's heard talk of allowing e-bikes on trails. Also that someone may resurrect the ban on banning plastic bags. We saw that in the legislature last year. But since then, you know, a couple of other cities have kind of taken action on that front. Moab became the second Utah city to ban plastic bags, and I guess Logan will be voting on that this month. But we haven't seen those bills numbered yet, or at least I couldn't find them in the legislative database. And then the last thing Matt mentioned was zoning for affordable housing. So this bill is numbered. It's SB 34. And it basically says that cities and counties need to zone for affordable housing. Otherwise, they'll miss out on some state money. And then there are 25 options to kind of allow for that housing to be built within communities. But Matt says that Park City is already like meeting at least two of those options. So I don't know that he's so worried about it, but it is something that could affect Park City.
Okay. And finally, just wanted to mention out, sounds like we could be saying goodbye to 3.2 beer, huh?
Yeah. So this came out last Friday afternoon. Although there's not a bill numbered yet, I was looking, searching through the database for it. But Senator Jerry Stevenson told Fox 13, I believe, that he's planning on running a bill to phase out 3.2 beer in grocery stores and allow them to stock 4.8 beer. And that's kind of because, you know, these big beer distributors nationwide are phasing out 3.2 beer, mostly because it doesn't sell. So it's something that, you know, we always talk about at the legislature. There's always alcohol-related legislation. So we'll keep an eye on that. I'll look to see when the bill is numbered, and then we'll give listeners some more details.
Okay. Emily, thanks.
Yeah, Leslie, we'll talk to you later.
That's KPCW reporter Emily Means down at the State Capitol. Well, after the Summit County Council granted a special exemption for height and an appeal to the council was denied, Woodward Park City now under construction and hopes to open as soon as this fall. On the phone, details, I have the project's planner, Michael Brill. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning.
So the website says you guys hope to open in November. Is that likely?
Yeah, we're staying on schedule so far with construction, and that's a pretty firm target for us, and we're hoping to have some lift installations starting in the spring and our summer trails going in over the summer and be on target for that November opening.
All right. Well, give us an overview of the Woodward campus here.
So we have a fairly large property that stretches from the frontage road up the side of the mountain towards the Pine Brook neighborhood, and we have a 50,000 square foot roughly building at the base that will house three different training areas that serve 10 to 12 different action sports. So one zone that's an indoor skate park for BMX and skate and scooter, center area that's for gymnastics, trampoline, aerial training, cheer, parkour, all of that in an indoor environment, and then a third section that is a series of ramps and rollers that's for ski, snowboard, BMX, skate, all to learn in a controlled indoor environment where they can practice tricks and practice transitions into foam pits and onto resi in a safe coached environment. And then also as part of that base area facility are our supporting uses where we have cafeteria to feed the kids that come to Woodward and ski patrol and first aid and those kinds of necessary functions.
Yeah, you mentioned...
And then outside on the mountain, we'll have fixed grip lift that will serve our terrain park and free skiing areas in the winter. We'll have both downhill, BMX, dirt jump, all of those kind of wheeled sports activities during the summer, as well as a couple of skate plazas, a pedestrian path that has a bunch of rollers and features and makes it a fun place to move back and forth across the campus for all those wheeled sports as well, and be welcoming, again, everything from skiing, snowboarding, BMX bike, downhill mountain biking, dirt jump, gymnastics, parkour, cheer. It's really encompassing of all the action sports, as well as learning about the culture and the art of filming those sports and just kind of bringing all those athletes together.
So will there be also like a snow half pipe to train in?
Yeah, there'll be the whole mountain will be sort of a play area for that type of training and learning environment, from the most beginner area where we'll have very gentle transitions and a half pipe that might only be knee high so that you really just learn those first abilities to make a turn, all the way up to the kind of elements that we're used to seeing, say, on King's Crown, or a half pipe that would be very aspirational for those that are training for X Games or for the Olympics.
Yeah. The chairlift, there'll be one or a couple of them?
One chairlift and one new magic carpet as well to serve our more beginner terrain.
Okay. And this fixed grip lift, I think there was some compromise that you made with the neighbors. Does it go to the ridge or just below?
No, it's just below the ridge, and we've actually done all of the preliminary grading for that now, so it's pretty easy to see where it'll land. And so the toe of the ramp will kind of come off to the area that we've graded flat now, and that'll transition into the first run down the hill. And our most beginner run will take off right from that point and kind of wind down the most gentle terrain that we have, but with a lot of neat little pocket parks and areas that a younger athlete can have fun building their skills. And then down the center of that mountain will be the more sort of advanced terrain.
Okay. So the tubing park, as we know, it stays?
It does, yes. We'll be really excited to bring that back next year. We've had a lot of long faces when we had to tell them that we were not open this year, but we just couldn't find a way to park those people and bring them safely through a major construction site. So all of that will be reopening for next year, and tubing will operate pretty much as normal, except that you'll get to see all of these other interesting things going on around you and learn about other action sports opportunities to participate in.
Okay. So what do we see happening out there now?
Right now, there's a lot of activity on the main building that I described first, and so we've just about finished pouring footings, and we've put up some of the steel structure, so we'll be progressing through the rest of the steel framing and walls and roofing over the next couple of months, and then get into the interior construction of all the features and interior finishes and mechanical, electrical, plumbing kinds of things. And then up on the mountain, there's a little bit of activity, just some trenching that you can probably see in the snow, and that's electricity and snowmaking lines, things that'll help serve the basic utility infrastructure for that skiing terrain.
Okay. And I had noticed that we had named it at one point Woodward Gogoza, but it's been changed now to Woodward Park City, just to reflect how the others are named as well.
Yeah, that's, I think, always been the company's intent. And sometimes, locally, we take on other monikers the way that people describe it and have historical names there. But, yes, Woodward Park City will be the name of the facility going forward.
Yeah. And as we see, of course, with the World Championships in town, I mean, how is it that the owners of this facility think that that will help what's happening now in terms of training world-class athletes?
Well, Yeah, I think certainly a number of the athletes that are participating this week are former Woodward campers and have developed at least some part of their skills and training coming through the Woodward program, in addition to all the great national programs that we have. And, you know, we're excited to be a little piece of that event. We have an informational booth at both the venue areas to tell people about what we're up to and to engage some of those former campers. But I think in general, Woodward has always sought to be a place that is aspirational for kids who want to pursue that track to become top-level amateurs and pros in the future. But also recognize that the way that we develop that kind of athlete is to make sure that we're introducing action sports at an early age to as big a population as we can. It's just like any other sport where the more kids that you can bring into the sport in an engaged fashion and keep them interested and keep them progressing in a way that's fun for them, but also, you know, coached and in a safe environment, the more that you're going to come out the back end with top-level athletes that can compete on an international level, and also a group of fans and kids who want to produce video content and help market those athletes and really create a culture that kind of is an evolution that keeps those sports healthy and keeps them growing.
Yeah, and I guess this is really a question I should ask the PR folks, but I mean, so will there be like season pass use or daily rates? I mean, just kind of drop-in fees?
There'll be all of those things, yeah. And I think Shadar Edelman, who's the GM of the facility and working with me hand-in-hand in the construction, is hoping to start rolling the specifics of that information out late spring or early summer, May, June sort of time frame. So check our website for more details coming on that. But there will for sure be drop-in passes. There will be daily rates. There will be sort of 2- and 3-day clinic kind of sessions during our big weekends that, you know, we have a lot of destination visitors in. And then there will be season pass availability as well, both for indoor and outdoor. So all of those opportunities will exist. And then we're exploring partnerships with some of the local organizations that help feed kids into these sports as well, like Youth Winter Sports Alliance and other partner organizations like that.
Okay, stay tuned. Grand opening, you're saying, in mid-November, huh?
Correct.
Okay. Michael, hey, appreciate your time.
Thanks so much for talking with us.
Michael Brill, again, is the project planner for Woodward Park City. Well, the end of an era. Lindsay Vonn, of course, announcing her retirement. Joining me now in the studio, Tom Webb with U.S. Ski and Snowboard. So she's just had enough, huh?
Yeah, I think the toll of injuries has brought the decision to a head. So just before the World Championships over in Åre, Sweden start, Lindsay made this announcement that, her time is done. I think it's a brave decision. She also admitted that she'd had some surgery back in the spring. And I think she did everything that she could to compete this season, but it's just not to be. So, yeah, she will be hanging up her skis after the World Championships. We think the last race that she will do, therefore, will be the downhill in Åre on February 10th. I'm sure NBC will be covering that. There will be a lot of attention on that race. So, yeah, unfortunately, it means also Lindsay doesn't get a chance to break that record. She had announced previously that she would be intending to compete at Lake Louise again next season, but I think that's now off the cards now that she is formally retired. So she ends her career in a couple of weeks. And will obviously be held up as the greatest female skier of all time. But hot on her heels is Michaela Schifrin, who continues to win. But yeah, I think we should rightfully respect and praise the career that Lindsay Vonn has had.
Yeah, so also given up her dreams of competing in a men's race.
I wouldn't say that for sure. I think there was obviously a lot of discussion about her competing in a men's race at a World Cup format. I wouldn't be surprised to see her revive the idea about doing something which is maybe more like a kind of exhibition race. I think Lindsay is extremely determined, and I'm sure that if she wants to continue that, she will find a way of doing so. So I'm not sure that that's completely gone, but let's wait and see.
Okay, well, let's talk a little about Michaela Schifrin again. She's just unstoppable.
We say this every single week. There are no superlatives that can really describe this. So she's now broken the U.S. ski record for number of wins in a season, with two more wins over the weekend in Maribor in Slovenia. She is now on 13 race wins for the season, and we've still got quite a long way to go in the season, so there is nothing to stop her breaking the all-time record, which I think I'm right in saying is 14. She's put herself up to fifth in the all-time list now, 56 World Cup wins, and yeah, just keeps absolutely dominating. You know, I've said this before, but I think, you know, anybody who watched the Super Bowl last night saw Tom Brady put the Patriots into, I think, their sixth World Super Bowl title. Well, Michaela has to be held up alongside somebody like Tom Brady. You know, her ability to just keep winning, dominating in all of these disciplines is just incredible. And anybody who's a fan of ski racing, I think we should all be extremely pleased to be alive during this generation, because we're watching history being writ.
Yeah, but she can't stand it when media and folks like us, you know, bring up those numbers. She's just like, it doesn't matter. It's just about making a good turn after another good turn.
That's absolutely right. And I think that speaks a lot to her humility. You know, one of the things that maybe people have seen over the last year or so is that she is starting to use social media to really kind of show who she is away from the slopes. And she is a fun. She's kind of goofy. She uses that word herself. And yeah, I think these records don't really matter to her. I'm sure, though, when you get back to your hotel room and, you know, you're celebrating just another win, they must be going round your head. I mean, she is truly standing on the shoulders of giants, and is just a phenomenon.
I think I read it was Vrenny Schneider who won the 14. So if she ties on and or breaks that, this week will show that.
Yes, and that's another of her heroes. I think it is worth pointing out that she's obviously in Sweden now, getting ready for World Championships. I think the World Championships relevance to World Cup points is slightly complicated. But I think if she can put a World Championship title down over there in Ore over the next few days, I think with the current rate that she is winning at, I wouldn't be surprised to see her winning rather more than one World Championship title. But it's going to be an interesting few days in Sweden for sure.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about World Championships, of course, kicking those off this weekend.
Yeah, the small matter of the World Championships here in Utah. So we started on Friday. Mick Dierdorf from Steamboat Springs won the men's snowboard cross title. Mick had never been on a World Cup podium, and then suddenly he puts himself into the annals of history as a world champion, and then followed it up again yesterday in the mixed team snowboard cross with Lindsay Jacobellis. That was the first time that event has ever been contested at world championship level. Mixed team snowboard cross will also be making its Olympic debut. And Lindsay, who hadn't had quite the world championship start that she would have liked on Friday, has now made herself a six-time world champion with Mick, having won those mixed team snowboard cross event over at Solitude Mountain. So we had 3 days at Solitude. We had the men's and women's snowboard cross on Friday. We had ski cross for men and women on Saturday, and then that mixed team event on Sunday. And then we had the small matter of free ski big air Saturday night at Canyons. And estimates are ranging anywhere up to about 8,000 people turning out for that. And I just want to say thank you to everybody who, A, came out. Amazing support, particularly for young Julia Crass, who put herself into silver, won the second place prize at the in the women's free ski big air in front of a big crowd, including lots of her friends and family. But everybody did what we have been asking people to do who have been coming along, which is a lot of people use public transport, a lot of people were carpooling. And so we had no kind of issues getting people in or out of the venue. And we want to say thank you to everybody who came along for doing that. That is one of the key messages for the events that are coming up for us over the next few days. We want to make sure that people can get up to Park City to come and see the events at Canyons, Park City, and at Deer Valley. So keep an eye on World Champs, 2019worldchamps.com. There's a spectator info section in that. We got a lot of information about public transport. Use public transport, leave early, and then come and cheer, because we've got some amazing events coming up.
Okay, well, let's talk about what we got happening today and tomorrow.
Yes, today we have Snowball Parallel Giant Slalom. That's going to be a really exciting event. That's in Park City. And tomorrow we have Parallel Slalom and Snowboard. Again, that's going to be a really, really good, exciting event. So arguably, these are our two quietest days after these two of the whole World Championship, so we don't have any evening events. But yeah, anybody who is out on the snow today at Park City, I urge you, stop and watch. It's going to be really, really exciting. Same again tomorrow.
Okay, we've got some live music scheduled today as well.
Yes.
At Cannon's Village.
Yes, we have a band called Joe Hurtler and the Rainbow Seekers, and they're going to be super fun. We had the Main Squeeze on Saturday night at Canyons. And looking ahead to Sunday, we're going to be finishing off proceedings on Main Street from 4 p.m. With hip-hop superstar Lupe Fiasco, who's going to be entertaining the crowds just after closing ceremonies. So music is part of the whole fun and excitement of the World Championships, giving everybody reason to stick around and enjoy the entertainment on show.
Okay, so again, people can get the entire rundown where?
2019worldchamps.com. Have a look at the schedule on there. We've got details about how to watch it if you're coming up to the events, how to watch it on NBC, and then there's a spectator info section on that website, and I urge people, leave early, carpool, and use public transport.
Okay, and then the rest of the men and women alpine team headed over to Sweden then for World Championships?
That's right. Most of the team are already there. There were a few transport issues getting people out of Germany yesterday, but the team are now over in Åre, Sweden. Training and qualifying starts immediately. We actually have a large contingent who've come out from the States to go and see and cheer on the team out there. We have high hopes for everybody, obviously Michaela, and also to celebrate Lindsay's last races.
Okay. Again, you'll be updating us on the events and results every day, 4:45.
Yeah, and I just want to say again, thank you to KPCW for giving us the opportunity to so regularly highlight what's going on. 4:45 p.m., my dulcet British tones will be confusing everybody with updates from the World Championships.
Okay. Hey, Tom, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
KPCW News Time now, 8:52. Good morning. Well, Sundance is a wrap, and it's another week of World Championships in town. In the studio, with a look back at how we did with Sundance and a look ahead as thousands more come in for the World Championships, I have Park City Special Events Manager Jenny Dearson, along with Transportation Planning Manager Alfred Dons. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So let's talk first with Sundance. Other than that first weekend's traffic snarl, we did okay?
You know, I think we did pretty good. I do want to quickly just say congratulations to Sundance Institute, and there's been so many people out there working on this event. You know, it really does take a team, and I think we had a lot of successes. The community partnerships that we made, the alternate modes of transportation that people are taking, really strong communication, of course, with KPCW, but all of the partners. And then one of the best things, I think, of the festival is Richardson Flats and the Homestake Lot and those programs there, as well as now having Ecker Hill year-round. And it's a long-term effect of all these transportation options that are really starting to pay off. There are still challenges out there, and I think what Alfred and I and what the community continues to identify is single-occupant cars.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that, because I saw on social media lots of complaints about Lyft and Uber and that we're making it so easy for them that it basically negates everything that you guys are trying to do, getting people onto public transport. So should the city be less accommodating for those kind of vehicles?
You know, I think it's tough. I think, you know, we also established a closer relationship with our local taxi stakeholders, creating staging areas for them. And, you know, with Uber and Lyft have developed communication with them. It is very difficult at a local level for us to regulate on TNCs, which are the Ubers and the Lyfts. With Lyft being a sponsor of Sundance specifically, we have a very very in-depth communication with them where they are also pushing out information, whether that's incoming storms or that we're seeing problems in the residential neighborhoods. And I can actually see that coming from Lyft and working directly with them. But it's tough. And in a lot of the Lyft vehicles, there's more than one person in there. But again, I think it's everyone taking that effort. And to be fair, I think a lot of times the visitors are using the transportation and they are the ones carpooling in larger groups. But it's the local community here getting around, whether that's Summit County or Wasatch County. And we need to, you know, try and avoid those peak times and do our best to get in the car together.
Yeah. So we know, Alfred, that it works okay, you know, when we've got the bus lanes there. But once we come into Park City, we don't have those bus only routes. And that's where we're starting to see, that's where things break down.
Yeah, no, that is correct. And going back to the TNC and the Uber and Lyft, they do serve a need. It does allow people to park once, not bring our car. Maybe they bring transit or take transit into town and they take the Uber home. But also keeps them from, you know, the VMT, which is vehicle miles traveled, looking for parking also. So at least they can be point to point and be able to get in and out rather quickly. But yes, you're correct. The infrastructure is limited once you get into Old Town. But again, once we get those people on the buses and mass transportation, it's better than having everybody, those 80 people, into other cars also. So it does, and the walkability of our town is also very important.
Yeah. Do we need to think about, though, maybe we're having car and bus routes only?
Yeah, and that's what we're kind of limited on also, is the jurisdictional control of our right-of-ways also. So we do try to maximize the flexibility of the right-of-way. In the summer events, we do have that bus-only lane down Deer Valley Drive. In the winter, it's not as easy. There's a little more risk there, too. We did talk about whether we have a bus lane during Sundance and FIS. But then if you have the snowstorm and Troy's out there trying to pull all the barricades at the last moment, we essentially have a public safety issue. So we do try to balance that, mitigate the risk, and maximize the communication.
Okay, well, let's talk a little bit about World Championships. And Tom was saying he thought it worked pretty well. I had heard reports, people waiting 30 minutes to get onto a white bus. And again, that's probably because it's backed up here in within the city limits. And then once trying to get onto the bus, it was already so full, which is a good thing, that they had to stay and wait for another bus.
So I was in town, and Alfred was, around town as well at the event on Saturday. In town, I think traffic was very smooth, specifically. As we move further into the evening event up at Canyons, we did get up there and take a look. And there was some traffic, but it all seemed to be moving relatively quickly. I heard reports from our transit department specifically that the buses were well spaced, and you know they were getting there as soon as they could, and then back out to the various areas. I did specifically drive out there just to see how things looked. And again, things were not gridlocked out there, but they were moving and getting people going to the event.
Yeah, so do we have another event like that Saturday night?
So actually, I think the next big event at Canyons is going to be tomorrow night on Tuesday. They have an event up there. So again, I think the best thing that you can do is to plan ahead. If the event, I believe, off the top of my head, and I could not have the right time, but so look at the schedule. If it starts at 7, don't aim to get there at 6:30. You need to be trying to get there around 5 or 6 to avoid those peak times. The resorts are letting out. The school district is letting out. So just, you know, keep in mind, it's also hard, you know, to get you up there within a moment's notice. So plan ahead for that. I do just want to hit, I think, the bottom line for this week. This is different than World Championships, which we see up at Deer Valley annually. World Cup, which we see up at Deer Valley annually. This is World Championships, and we have 3 or 4 resorts and events, you know, across all of those. So do pay attention. We also have some incoming snow. We have snow today and then another storm likely tomorrow and Wednesday. So just with everything going in town, I want to say don't let your guard down and do everything you can to keep helping, working towards these initiatives.
Okay. Again, everything stays the same then with Ecker Hill?
Correct.
Right?
Yes. And that's been heavily utilized. I mean, it's only been online for 6 to 8 weeks. So we're starting to see more and more parking out there. I parked out there on Saturday for the opening ceremonies, and there's probably 250 cars out there. Very, very frequent service. So again, like I said last week, leave the driving to us. And as Jenny said, plan ahead. And again, we'll have a very, very successful event.
Okay. Let's mention quickly what's coming up this Sunday. Of course, we've got a street dance happening on Main Street.
Yes. So on Sunday, we do have a closing ceremony and concert. That's going to be from 4 o'clock to 7 p.m. Lower Main Street from 7th Street all the way down to 9th Street will be closed for setup for that event all day on Sunday. So just those impacts there. There are normal peak winter rates, so no parking changes. But again, I think the main thing is definitely continue going to Ecker Hill if you're coming in town. And then also Main Street employees, Homestake is still running at 8 o'clock in the morning. We anticipate town being busy, so that's why we are still running that shuttle. And then I do want to mention and thank the resorts for doing their part in getting their employees, to consider alternate modes of travel. They're doing incentive programs and hosting activities post the events to get guests to also stay at the resorts longer to kind of spread out that egress. So whether that's fireworks or music or their lounges staying open later so that people can, you know, not all leave at once. So really appreciate the resorts for doing that. And then just a reminder, too, at Deer Valley starting Wednesday in the evening for the egress, you'll see traffic mitigation happening there. So you'll see out of those lots at Deer Valley, all traffic will go one way and buses will be going the other way to expedite buses out of those Deer Valley lots.
Okay, Jenny, Alfred, thanks for your time.